This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to theCelticUnderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week end and the Celtic Written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glen Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast. Yesterday, Celtic beat Hibs in the Scottish Cup, or yesterday as I record this, so I am joined now by Eddie Pearson to discuss that and anything else that's been going on in Scottish football. Eddie, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me on. Enjoyable day yesterday. Got burnt to bits. The sun yesterday was unbelievable. I mean, it said it was about 16 degrees, but it was much, much warmer than that. And I find myself descending into very, very Celtic Da territory yesterday by putting a big coat on to go to the game and having to sit it across my lap because it was too warm and thinking, I am turning into that old man that used to sit next to me. Like, a massive, and I was watching guys coming in, and I'll explain some of the complexities about where I was sitting and things like that later, but I was watching guys coming in with big jackets on thinking, I'm like those old guys. I've dressed completely inappropriately for this weather, but it was March, so it's completely understandable that I had my big coat on, my usual baseball cap, and I was roasting yesterday at the football.
Well, in your defence, so on the other way round, I have been to many a game where it's been sunny but absolutely Baltic.
Yes.
And young people, to sound real Celtic, that young people have been scouting about behind in the way to the game wearing just a short sleeve Celtic top and shorts, and you think, you're an arsehole, because you've just looked out the window, seen the sunshine, and thought, oh, must be warm and sunny, and it's freezing. And in your defence, I walked the dog at 9 o'clock yesterday morning, and it was 4 degrees because it was still cool. I, like you, had a big thick coat because I thought, well, it might be okay in the sun. Old man chat in my head, might be okay in the sunshine, but see in the shade, it'll be freezing.
And for me, I was moved from the Lisbon Lions stand, the jogs, the Rangers end, right? I was moved from the Rangers end because that's where we sit, because that's all the Hibs fans were in there.
Yeah.
And so where I normally sit there, you're kind of underneath the upper tier, you're in the shade. So, and I was moved round to just basically in line with kind of the 18-yard line, just round for the Green Brigade. And so I was being exposed to the sun in a way that I'm never exposed to it. So a combination of things. One, I never get that much sun when I'm at a 3 o'clock kickoff normally. And two, I'm always cold underneath there. And I'm constantly telling you that we should be investing money in heaters, overhead heaters, like they've got to the Real Madrid stadium. And if they've got it in Madrid, then surely they should have it in Glasgow. So my defence is that I was doing my automatic conditioning thing where put your big coat on, you're going to the game in March. And so I had to have it sitting across my lap. Everybody, all the other old guys around me, they took their jacket off and they had it folded up, sitting on their lap, like, and then having to hold it when you jump up to applaud goals and things like that. So fortunately, there was only a couple of goals, so it could have been a lot worse.
Well, so we not stand up, actually, in the summer, the sun, because it's high, doesn't really tend to hit us directly. So it does tend to be only sunny days in the winter. And we sometimes go downstairs to the concourse at halftime because it's cold upstairs. And my dad's 83, so that's why. Today, I think, yesterday was the first time ever we went downstairs at halftime because it was too hot. It was to cool down. And it, like you say, it's March. We were roasting. So now that we've had that old man complaint about it was just too warm and sunny out of the way, how did you enjoy the game? Did you enjoy having 7,000 away fans at it?
Well, the thing for me was that because we're moved, effectively we're moved from behind the goal to, well, I think it was block 108, so we were just on the other side of the Green Brigade, and that was fascinating because the last thing I wanted to do was be basically your classic paper ticket wanker, which is, yes, you know, like your Champions League guy that's coming in, he's hoarding his ticket up, he's looking, he's sitting in people's seats, And they're walking around going, sorry, mate, that's my seat. And that person's been sitting there for years. Like, no, I've got my ticket. That's not the right section. So there was a degree of tension there. And, you know, younger guys will not get this. But for some reason, as you get older, you get more tense about things that never used to bother you when you were younger, right? So I find myself going, when you get in there, when you find your seat properly, when you get, and make sure nobody, well, if somebody comes along and says, sorry, you're in my seat. And all these things were running through my head. So we set off as early as we possibly could to get in. I then got the turnstiles mixed up. So me and Pearson Jr. went to the turnstile and he tried to get in and he went, I don't think that's the right one. I said, I just get in. And sure enough, it wasn't the right one. He went, I tell you, it wasn't the right one. So he was annoyed at me to start with. We had to go all the way around and then come in and it felt mobbed. And I thought we were there quite early. But I thought that the whole setup, the walk up there, actually getting in through the turnstiles, it was really, really busy. And I don't know whether that's because where we go around and maybe a bit quieter. It's more of the family section, so it seems a bit calmer. I don't know why, but it really felt as if this is like a big game. It felt like a big event, and with them having 7,000 supporters there, I suppose that adds to it. But when we got in and we eventually found our seats and we sat down, there was a woman and her boy who normally sit further along the row from us. We're sitting right in front of us, so they obviously moved a few of them about. The noise from the Green Bay Gate, because we're that bit closer. See the drumming. I don't know how people put up with that. Like, you're mental. And again, you said, that's all the old man stuff out the road. We're going to be doing a lot of old man stuff tonight. Never mind all the other things about pyro, that banners, that, right? See the actual physical drumming? They should be banned for that alone. That non-stop through the whole game, it drove me mental. And I have never really appreciated it before yesterday. It was consistently going off and off and off. So people were saying 7,000 supporters. I never really heard the 7,000 Hibs supporters. Now, I don't know if you could hear them and they were putting a good show on. I saw that their ultras, whatever those guys are called, were tucked away up behind the pillar at the restricted view seats. Now, I would be amazed if that's where they were actually put, but they were tucked away so you couldn't really see them at all. A couple of folk I knew who were in the main stand said that, aye, they sounds like they were making a lot of noise. But they didn't show at all. And maybe that's because their team never showed. Their team absolutely, you know, see, if that's the form team in Scotland, then we're in real trouble. You know, because they presented exactly as I expect them to. We were at a social event on Friday night and we said, we're going to run right over the top of them. And they never gave us any cause for concern at all. A bit disappointed we never ran right over the top of them and put three or four by them. We could have done, but we played them off the pitch.
So they were, well, I did hear them. I mean, I'm not stand upper level with the tunnel. So I did hear them. I mean, not that they were overpowering. You know, from where I sit, I can hear the boys, you know, diagonally opposite, and the Green Brigade is sort of down to the left. So actually, they're slightly, the drumming's not as noticeable for me.
Honestly, the singing was good, and the atmosphere was good, and all that stuff. Well, I say the atmosphere was good. The thing that we moved from, we used to sit in section 144, which was basically from the day the stadium was built, that was where the smoking section was, and that was the cheapest tickets. So we bought those tickets, me and my old man and a couple of my pals. And over time, different things, families and
so
stuff like that.
The smoking section's now moved to the toilets for the younger supporters.
Yeah, that's it. For those of a certain age, yes, you used to be able to smoke there, and no, you're not supposed to be able to smoke in the toilets. Smoking in the toilets is the least of our problems, to be honest with you, in the toilets. So that section, we're basically about 10 to 15 rows in front of where the guy fell for the upper tier in the Dallas game, and maybe about 10 to 15 rows away from the guy ran onto the pitch at the Dallas game, funnily enough, so really perfectly positioned. But because the junior came along and then another junior came along and another junior came along, trying to get extra tickets for the kids. We were contacted about a decade ago. We could get four seats, maybe a bit more than that. Four seats in the family stand altogether. So that's where we sit now. And because you've been there for so long, you kind of take it for granted what's around you, you know? So in front of us, we've got a lot of families getting older. But you know, Ma's and Dad's there with their sons or their daughters. Got a lot of women, so and it's all fairly sedate. It's not really the right word. It's an event if somebody goes tonto and it's standing up getting at pelters, you know, because I think it's a combination of younger people feeling a bit inhibited, no one to stand out. That'll change in a couple of years' time if we're all still sitting in the same bit as they start to get older and in their 20s. But you don't get a lot of the really rambunctious type of supporter there, you know, and a couple of them sing along. And,
sorry,
and
is this Jimmy Sanderson who's just come on the...
I'll explain what rambunctious means later on. Do you right, Mr. But because you're there for so long, you just kind of take that for granted and think, that's just the way people support and it's quiet there. But see, by going round and sitting in front of the hospitality tickets, and everybody was very nice, don't get me wrong, but see the difference in the demographic of age and the gender demographic. It was really, really noticeable that all of a sudden you can wear, all right, that's right, because if we were still in 144, this is what it'd be like for us. What's a much older guys who've been there since the year dot, you know, a couple of changes, one or two younger guys here, but who'd been there since 94, really well established, were comfortable in their skin. You know, you could see that the interplay between people when somebody starts to have a go at somebody, go, oh, you're always having a go at him and stuff. Everybody knew exactly, you know, they'd been sitting with these people for the last 30 years, so they knew exactly what they were getting. So it was really, really different. So the difficulty was, the guy next to me was perfectly pleasant, was chatting away, older guy, I came from Fife. All right, where do you normally sit? Or not? Before the game, all dead chatty. See, when the game started, everybody was crap. McGregor was crap. Engels was crap. Carter Vickers was rubbish. Trusty was garbage. Sloop was terrible. Johnson, everybody was getting, you know, that's rubbish, that's not good enough. And so, I'm watching the game thinking, I think we're all right, but you know that way you're dominated by the perception around you. So I had to go back last night and watch again on Sports Scene and think, did that pick up the wrong vibe here? I thought we were all right. But I came away from the game thinking it was much tighter and closer than it actually was. And it was only when I watched it back again later, I realised, no, it was just this guy next to me who was just moaning constantly and absolutely loving moaning, reveling in it, really enjoyed himself. But it was really, really different from my usual experience of where I sit, and it made me appreciate where I sit. Well, and the good thing is, even though they're getting a certain amount of tickets, I'll have my seat back for Sunday. You know, and I'm looking forward to getting back there. But that was a different type of experience for what I'm used to, you know. So my perception of the game is skewed by where I was geographically, which I didn't really anticipate being the case. It did mean I could see every offside happening really, really clearly, because we were bang in line with that 18-yard line. And my dad runs said all the time, but that was the only thing.
But on that, two things about that. I was speaking to someone, went to the fan forum, and we were just talking in general about various things. And your point about the people who don't get, who tend to be at cup games and Champions League games, that they're not normally around you. And we were just discussing about how that's sometimes quite unusual, because the point you've just made, you're in a wee mini society in the bit that you sit in. Everybody knows how everybody else behaves, and it becomes a normal way of behaving in that bit. And whether it's a section where mainly people are rambunctious, you would say, or whether it's a bit where people are more sedate, everybody knows. And so if you then chuck in people who are not normally at games with a ticket for the game, their behaviour will be out of kilter with everybody else in that section, and what the norms of that wee mini society are. And I often find that at Hampden, because where I am, there's only one person who really... There used to be a guy that we nicknamed the Volcano, who sat about two rows diagonally up behind us, who would just gradually through the game would get more and more agitated and then suddenly just erupt at something. But the only other thing just now is guy Ronnie, who normally sits next to me to my left, who's not well at the moment, so if he's listening, hopefully he's feeling better. Apparently he's not so well. But Ronnie, he will pick on a player and decide fairly early on that that's the guy who's having the crap game today. And if I could get better signal in Celtic Park, I would put a bet on him to score a goal, that guy, whoever it is that Ronnie's decided to pick on. Because he normally does score a goal, so we can all then turn round and have a good laugh at Ronnie for getting it completely wrong about that guy being shite for the day. But it is, and then you go to Hampden, and so I'm used to a section where nobody's having a go at the team. One person is picking on one player and that's it. And then you go to Hampden and you're surrounded by people who are from different sections complaining about passing the ball about the back, complaining about stuff that you're sitting there thinking, have you never been to a Celtic game for about the last 10 years? This is how we play every week. You surely can't be complaining about this. You watch this every week. So it is really different to be sitting amongst other people. And then, as you say, just the geography of things makes you see the game completely different. Even a couple of times when you and I know someone in the main stand who's invited across, and it's not dramatically different to where I am, just the opposite side of the pitch, and the game feels completely different just watching it from the other side.
It totally did. And see, because we sit behind the goal, and you can see the play spread out in front of you. So you can see where the passes are coming from and where the passes should be going. Whereas when you're approaching it, so as opposed to vertically, you're approaching it horizontally. It's a different, and it was good. It was close up and it was enjoyable and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know. You just get, and it made me reiterate that idea of folk wanting, just move your seat for the Celtic end plan and all that sort of stuff. The game you'd want to put in. I'm really comfortable where I sit at the ground, and I'm imagining lots of other people. Hey, those guys that are sitting there, that, you know, where the sun's beating down in their face just over the main stand all the time, they're dead comfortable with the sit because it's where they're used to and where they're comfortable with. And it made me think that that's a real challenge. If a Green Brigade are going to get anywhere with that, they're going to have to do a lot of work to change that perception. The other thing that occurred to me as well, I was so painfully aware, and I could hear myself doing it. I was trying not to, but I couldn't stop myself trying to reiterate to the guy that I had a season ticket, the guy next to me. I'm not just one of these guys. It's just a blow-in. It's just here for the cup games. You know what I mean? It's just like, see back here. See if you go five back, and then you go into seats. See where that guy with the Hibs jersey is. See just next to him. Right, I sat there, right, because I was so desperate to establish my credentials as somebody that goes to the game. You think, what are you doing? Yeah, it's you know, the guy doesn't care. But I just wanted to be clear. I'm not just here for the big cup game, right? I go to the games, and I just caught myself thinking, shut up, you idiot.
But the one thing on a more serious note for the club and stuff like that, the number of people around me on Champions League games this season in particular, and for that game against Hibs, a lot of the regulars were still there and a lot of the normal faces, but there was a sufficient number of people in the Champions League and then yesterday who I never see that were around me. It really hits home how, for many people, and this is something the club always need to be aware of, and it's a difficult balancing act, and I appreciate, for many people, the additional cost on top of the season book costs are just unattainable for them. I mean, particularly the Champions League, I would say, in terms of, you would think, if you're buying a season book, the big game is then the Champions League game thereafter. But you've still got a reasonable number of people for whom they're just not buying the Champions League game. Just shows you the challenge the club have got in getting the pricing right for these things, and then how much of a challenge the cost of modern football is to so many people.
I think, to be fair to the club, I think they got the pricing right. I mean, was it £26 for me and £13-15 for the wee man? You know, I think that's what I would expect to pay for a game, you know, but then that's what I would expect to pay for every home game. There's a Rangers game that isn't naturally on my ticket, because they're the special tickets just in case. And if that's going to be the capacity that they're going to allow into Celtic Park and to Ibrox going forward, I would quite like Celtic to just go, right, listen, we're just going to put those two games back onto your season ticket as of this year, and that's what you pay. So I've got the security of knowing I've definitely got them. But you're right, because what we've had four or five European games this season.
Yeah.
But is it three cup games? You know, so it was Kamarnock the first one, and then Raith Rovers, and then this one, or there was a one before Kamarnock. I think it may have been Kamarnock, maybe the first one. You know, so there's a couple of League Cup games there. You know, you've already paid for your Rangers tickets as part of your season ticket, so there's two Rangers tickets coming out. There's a semi-final coming now, and there's a final, and neither of us, neither of us would really struggle to do that, you know, because we can afford the big, just don't do something else and do that instead. But that's a real challenge, particularly for folk with families that want to take them to games. And if you're going to try and cultivate the next generation of supporters, A, you've got a huge challenge getting them into the ground because there are not many spaces. And B, you can't afford to take them. Which is why, to be fair, I thought the Raith Rovers tickets were so good. And that's why there were so many families at the Raith Rovers game. I don't know where you were, but in my section, there was hundreds of, lots of mums taking 3, 4, 5 kids along to the game and making it like their first game and stuff. And I think it's important that we don't put the cup games onto the season ticket for exactly that reason. because I think it does give us an opportunity to bring new people to the game. You know, how many kids, yesterday it was their first ever game at Celtic Park because there was tickets available in public sale, or the Raith Rovers game was their first ever game. You know, if it goes on to season tickets, perhaps we'll lose that.
Yeah, so, and the important thing is the point you make about because they're not in the season book, because, you know, there are always, Celtic have tickets available for every home game, but invariably they then sell out. But if you look, I mean, there was somebody tweeted the fact, and I was party to a conversation with Chris Mackay. So the person who tweeted it, I now know is one of two people. Because the conversation was just me, two people, and Chris Mackay at the end of a fan forum. Yeah, we had 500 season books at the end of the season book renewal, which just shows you how many people renew and how little churn we've got. But there was 500 season books, and his comment was they went through 6,000 people on the waiting list before those 500 tickets went, which initially sounds like waiting list isn't that great. But if you ever look at Celtic Park when it comes up saying there's a league game and there's tickets available, they are one here, one there, one wherever. So the reason we had to go through so many is because it was just random single seats for the bulk of them. And so if people are in groups, they're knocking them back saying, nah, can I, you know, we want them in a group, so I'm not going to take it. Again, a lot of them tend to be right at the very top of the stadium, single seats right at the very top. So again, there'll be people knocking them back because, well, they just can't. They might be older or younger, and they just can't get that far up to go to buy those tickets. So it's not as straightforward as that. So your point about them not being does mean that those tickets that were available for the Hibs game and for the Raith Rovers before that and Falkirk and League Cup, etc., would have been probably a group of season book holders. Like, you know, there's me, my dad, my brother and my nephew. So if all four of us decided not to go to a cup game, they would be four together. That would be the case and not these random ones and twos. So that also makes it a situation, you know, relevant, your point there about making them available. But it is difficult. It's difficult because you go and spend money extending the stadium and, you know, one extra seat brings in 500 to 800 quid. Doesn't really pay the cost of making that seat. I think it would be something like, it works out, it's something like £4,000 a seat if we wanted to extend the stadium.
I don't think the stadium, I'd like the main stand to be renewed and modernised. I think that, you know, is there a case for putting extra seats in there? Perhaps if the Celtic end did ever turn into something, which is looking increasingly unlikely the way the proponents of it are going in terms of the way they're engaging and the things they're saying. But if I say hypothetically, the Celtic end did become...
You mean there's a certain group that's not that conciliatory?
I think you'll find that apologies have been made.
No, I don't want concrete wellies, so we'll move on.
Don't understand what that meant. Right. So yes. So if we were to say hypothetically we were to do something with the Celtic end, then what I would like us to have is say a refreshed main stand that allows the people in the Celtic end to move to those unique new seats, because to avoid exactly the set of circumstances you're talking about, nobody's going to be moving to one, two seats, individual seats somewhere dotted around the rest of the ground, because like there's four of us sit together. Mm-hmm. We would want, if we were to move seat, we want a block of four. If we have to move, do you know what I mean? Don't want to move. If we have to move, we want a block of four together, because that's our experience of going to games. Because that's partly why we go. We go to be together. You know, three generations of supporters, all there in the same place, across the family, having the opportunity to be together, we're not together otherwise. If that was to be fragmented, I think you'll lose people. And so there's not enough seats for that, you know. So things like the, I suppose things like the folk that aren't on the home ticket scheme gives us a false impression that there would be seats available. Because I actually said to the guy, are these two seats normally taken? He goes, aye, they're just not on the home ticket scheme. They don't use them for Champions League games and things like that. But I think it is good that not everybody's in the home ticket scheme, because it does allow that sort of wee bit of freshness and new people to come to the game and to participate in it. And I like seeing all these kids coming in for the first time, and they're all buying, I know the flags are a pain in the neck, but they're all buying the flags and they're waving them about and stuff, and the wee Japanese headbands that they were wearing and stuff, you know, just the enthusiasm. It's like the Keno Foundation all over the building. Do you know what I mean? Like when you get that, and I would hate to think that we would move to a model where your Champions League tickets and your Scottish Cup tickets are all part of your season ticket and you need to be a big wedge up front. And if you don't take them, then it ends up working against you, because I think we would lose that opportunity for folk who don't get to be part of Celtic as often as perhaps they would like, for financial reasons or for whatever else, to get that wee moment. And that's what I like the best about the Cup games over the last couple of months. I really felt as if it was nice to see people getting to participate in Celtic, because it is becoming increasingly about a close shop.
That's that. On the atmosphere and stuff, what did you make of the team? I think for most people's opinion, that looks like that's Brendan's first choice 11. Team that starts against Rangers next week.
Exactly, two words in my mouth. That's the team for Sunday. You know, I think that looks increasingly like the strongest. I'm not convinced as a left back, but he's a good player and he's getting better and better every single game. I thought he possibly had his best game yesterday in a Celtic jersey. I think he was inverting quite well. I'm not sure how good a defender he is, but I'm not sure how good a defender he'll need to be, because we go forward so much. He's strong. It looks like there's a fair chance he'll score next week, because he likes to take a shot. Do you know what I mean?
We were saying yesterday, it's not just he. You can patently see there's a lot of power behind those shots as they're going in as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't like to get in front of one of them. You know, there's a couple of times you thought, oh, that must have been sore. But I liked the way he was driving forward. I liked the way he was overlapping. He linked up quite well with Jota. I said once or twice, he sat like there was a bit of miscommunication there. But again, it's coming. And the fact we've only got one game a week now instead of the two gives them more time to work together to build that understanding. Maida through the middle is just, you can see why Japan do it. You know what I mean? I thought we would lose something by not having him out wide, and his pace, and he's really, really electric, just running away from people, or in the case of Tavernier, running at him and chasing him. But the fact that he's one in, I thought we'd lose a bit of that. I think he actually looks better there now. You know, his goal scoring record shows that. But also, his technique is better than we thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Middle. And I was in a conversation again with a wee man yesterday, and saying, do you think it's a consequence of, you know, the amount of, how many times have we seen Maida here down the touchline and turn and put a cross in, and it goes away out for a throw in, or it doesn't even get to the goal because it goes out for a by kick and stuff like that? Is it because of the speed he's moving at and he just turns and hits that nobody could have a technique good enough to be able to do those two things at the same time? Whereas if he's coming straight through the middle, he's just touching the ball straight forward. You know, and the sort of Henrik Larsson-esque goal that he scored fortnight ago to Celtic Park, trying to remember who that was against, but just one of the last ones. It was really, really lovely the way he brought it around and then just finished it off. The technique that he's displaying by playing through the middle, I didn't think he had. Like, one of two things. Either he's always had it, and the way he's been asked to play down that wing hasn't allowed him to show it, or second one is he's getting coached in a different way and he's getting better. I just hesitate to say whether a player at 26, 27 years of age can develop a technique that they've not had before. You know, but whatever is happening is working brilliantly.
Well, I mean, for me, one of the problems with football is, and everybody listening to this will think it will know what I'm meaning. If you think about yourself in work or in a work environment, most people are better at their job at 32 than they were at 26. Now, I know there's an element of physicality, but in terms of the skills and the techniques of your job, I always find it strange that in football, there's almost an attitude of once people get to the first team and about 22, 23 and they're playing, that's it. You never really hear much about them developing there on. But I think you're right. You know, if you just think from a pure physical perspective, if you're running at full pace in a straight line and you've got the option of being able to balance yourself left or right, but just if you're running the pace that he's at and then you have to turn your body and then try and whip across in, it's obviously a more difficult, I would have thought, it's a more difficult technique to do that out wide, and maybe that's the issue. And then the other thing that we've got as a consequence of that is the two wingers that are now wide are proper wingers with a skill set. With the greatest respect to Maeda, his skill set for getting past people is he just runs faster than them, whereas Jota and Kun have got a skill set where they can go past people because of their technique. And so maybe that the net position of that with those three is we have more creativity from the three.
Aye. And I'm not disagreeing with you, because yeah, everything you've said is correct. I'm going to go a wee bit against the grain here and say, I'm referring to Kuhn recently is a one-trick pony. It's a wonderful trick, but I'm starting to find myself, I don't know, just being, let the old guy that was sitting nice to me, dead money. See, Coon, I'd like to see Coon sometimes go down the outside. Everything is, he sees that 18-yard line, and then he starts to run across it. And sometimes he's scoring goals, you know, against all sorts of teams. But there's a bit of me thinks that there's a predictability coming in terms of what he's doing. And see if you can stop him for running across the 18-yard line, then it becomes less effective. And I can see why he never made it at Ajax and Bayern Munich, because I think that perhaps he's at the top of his potential selling market just now. In terms of next season, I think teams will have him figured out, which doesn't mean to say he'll not still score goals, but I don't think he'll be as effective next season as he has been this season, because they'll see what he's going to do. What this guy's going to do is he's going to try and juke, and he's going to cut in, and he's going to run on the 18-yard line, and he's going to try to let one go with his left foot. So be aware of that. If you stop him doing that, he's not going to do anything else. So I think perhaps we need to guard against that.
But I suppose that's where Alistair Johnson's so important.
On the overlap, yep.
Because the overlap of Alistair Johnson means that they've still got to have somebody who's ready to go down the line. So they can't just double up on him and both of them follow him across, that would just block off his shot.
But I think what it does show with Jota on the other wing is Jota is an exceptional winger. And he's not back to his best by any stretch of imagination, but see that capacity to go inside, to go outside, turn to go back inside again. That's unusual in a winger nowadays, you know, and that dribbling ability, it's so rare to see, but it's exactly what we pay money for. That's the type of winger that we always like to see in a Celtic jersey. Could you get two of them? No, I don't think you could. So you just need to accept that, get the best version of the other type of winger you can get, and Coon's probably right now pretty close to that. But I think to speak of the two of them in the same breath, I think Jota's a class above Coon, I really do.
Well, so do I. So I've got a question for you about Jota. And I was discussing this with someone the other week, someone in Scottish football. Is Jota faced, well, not that dilemma, but could he be the Henrik Larsson for this generation? And what I mean by that is he's been away for big money moves, and it's failed twice. So the chances of, so certainly in the short to medium term, the chance of another big money move coming from Celtic, or from, you know, to take him away from Celtic is probably limited, because clubs will look at his last two moves and how they didn't work out. So might he be best suited to then take the attitude of, there's a place in football that's special for me, where it works for me and it works for them, and that's here at Celtic. And so I'm not getting the move. I actually just are going to enjoy the next many years of my footballing life playing for Celtic as a first team player.
I'd like to think the answer to that is yes, but my natural cynicism about football would suggest that if Bournemouth come in for him in 2 years and give him a crack at the EPL, he'll say, this was great, this helped me get back to where I was, now I'm going to go and have another go. You know, I just...
Yeah, but the other issue to that is,
just cynical about the whole thing.
Might a Bournemouth not come in for him because of the previous two moves?
Aye, but that's why I went for a Bournemouth level type of club rather than a Chelsea level type of club or something. Do you know what I mean? I could see his numbers being strong enough that a club at that level will take a punt on him, and he might not be a regular with them, but he'll be playing in the EPL for big money. I suppose he's made his money and him and his dad's company and building the homes in Portugal. He's set up for life now because of the move he got to Saudi Arabia, you know, and so he perhaps doesn't need it. And I'd like to think he's the type of guy that would see past all of that. I just think you look at Carlos Vickers. So, you know, I've not done a Celtic Weekly for the last 2 weeks, but just for domestic reasons. But I was going to try and put one together on Friday night, and eventually overtook me. One of the things I was going to say was there's a lot of talk that Carter Vickers is starting to feel as if there's too many games up here, and he's looking at potentially his agent starting to look, you know, for moves elsewhere, you know, and I think Everton was being mentioned. I think Everton are probably one of the clubs that's looking quite closely at Coon, but obviously they're up and they're having a look at other players there, and Carter Vickers would catch the eye as is a good addition to the squad for a team like that. But I can see it eventually, unless you're over it, you know, and you know you want to stay part of it, like your Scott Browns or your James Forrest or your Cal McGregor's. I don't know what the attraction is to stay for the rest of your career at Celtic. Oh, it's a terrible thing to say as a Celtic supporter. But unless it's in you, then why would you not decide to go back to Portugal and play for Sporting Lisbon for your, you know, when you're 29 or something, if they come in for you or Porto or whoever, you know, or a medium sized club there, when you can earn roughly the same money you can earn for us, you wouldn't get the same adulation, absolutely. But once you've experienced it, don't know how much longer, and I don't think that's really what people want to hear. They want to hear happy, happy, cheery, cheery. But you know, I just think there's that idea. Enjoying while we've got him, I think it's probably the best way to think about it. You know, make the most of him being here. He's come back. It's again, turn to the wee man. I says, Joe, I was performing right in front of him. Says, isn't it incredible? But Joe is back in a Celtic jersey on a permanent basis. Never thought I would see that. Never, you know, and on that basis, anything's possible. But I cannot believe how good it is that we've got this guy playing in front of us again.
Exactly the type of thing that you would normally expect if it was going to happen. It was just a 6-month loan to boost him up to get in game time and then back away.
A Craig Bellamy type, you know, if you're going to get a Roy Keane or a Robbie Keane, that type of, if you're going to get a tier of player like that, they're just passing through, you know, and I'll take it for as long as we can get it.
So on to the game itself. I actually was surprised because I thought, as we were leaving the game, I thought that brother and I were talking, we were saying, this will be one of these ones where the press tomorrow and Radio Scotland on the way home in the car will be saying about how good Hibs were because they stayed in the game until the last minute, when actually I can't think of a save that Schmeichel had to make. So I was actually quite pleasantly surprised when I got in the car and they were basically saying, yeah, Celtic completely dominant, and the Hibs keeper was the man of the match for Hibs, and you know, whilst they did okay to stay in the game, they never laid a glove on Celtic. I was surprised because that's how I saw the game as well. I thought we were really good to start with, bit of a lull for a period in the first half, but not in terms of them coming into it, just a bit of a lull in terms of the pressure from us. Then we get the goal, second half okay. Then we did, for a wee period, lose a bit of control, and then Brendan Mason substitutions, and again, McGregor goes off and Ingles goes in the middle of the park, and I thought Ingles was excellent in the number six position. And then, interestingly, my brother and guy Paul next to me, we were just talking about when McCowan came on, the ball kept going to McCowan with him having two options, and he kept picking the wrong one until the goal. But that was just, what about you?
I don't disagree with much of that, to be honest with you. I did think that keeper is pulling off some brilliant saves. I mean, I thought in the first half, I thought he got his hand on a couple of things that he'd no right to get in, and you need to give him credit because I thought the defence in front of him were terrible. You know, and again, all that stuff, the Hibs support chanting for Rocky and all that sort of stuff, but he's a very poor player, poor player, that guy. I thought that they tried to... So I tried to block Maida's runs a couple of times, you know, as a definite tactic, stepping into his path. Mm-hmm. And stepping into his path in a way that they're not looking at him, so it's not their fault he's running into them. But the amount of times Maida ended up on his backside because they had just stepped in his path, just cute as anything, you know, clearly cheating, but certainly not a booking or a foul. You know, they knew what they were doing. There was a tactic there. I thought our midfield performed well. I thought Hatate had a couple of misplaced passes, but at the same time had a couple of absolute Bobby Dazzlers. You know, which is his Hatate for you. I did think Engels...
Sorry, can I just interrupt? Bobby Dazzler's rambunctious. Have you read a 1970s, 80s dictionary?
I'm telling you, I had my old coat over my lap. I'm leaning into this. You know, I'm really going to go for it now. I'm away from driving my Penny Farthing about places and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of something dead old, probably Penny Farthing. I don't know where that came from. This is why I should be in charge of the edit, so I can cut that bit out. I did think that Engels might have been the player coming off when McCowan was coming on, though, because I was very surprised to see that McGregor was the player that was getting substituted, because you just don't take McGregor off. But that's in the last couple of games he's taken him off. And I thought that was significant, that a game of that importance because, you know, we're playing, whether we think they were good or not, the form team in Scotland, a team that beat us, shouldn't have beat us. If the referee had done his job and VAR had done their job, that conversation wouldn't be an issue, but it had beat us. And your captain is such a pivotal figure in the team, and we want to get the treble, so we need to win the cup games. I was quite surprised that he was a player that came off, and I thought Engels had went quiet in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And by moving him back one, Engels suddenly came to life again. And just that slightly deeper quarterbacking role, directing the play a wee bit, really seemed to suit him. McEwen...
Funnily enough, sorry, just to interrupt on that. I can't remember what he said on the podcast, but certainly he said messages, Ross Hall, that we've had on here. One of the things that he's commented, that the real way that Engels has performed at best for the Belgians under-21s has been these raking passes and diagonals right into the toes of strikers and wingers. So he's maybe suited to it.
I think that his range of passing, there was a couple of balls he was playing to wide to the left. I can't remember if it was Maida that was playing out there at that point.
I think he played a couple to Yang that when he hit them, I thought, well, he's never going to get that. And he did.
It was Yang, you were right. Played to, and there was one where Yang was actually offside, just offside. But yep. Really, really lovely. The vision was spectacular. You know, the sort of stuff that Hatate was doing in the first couple of seasons, you know, where you thought, where's that going? And it just drops. Brilliantly, you know, Paul McStay type things. You know, Paul McStay type of passes. So he really came onto a game there. McEwen, I agree with you. I thought McEwen just couldn't he get up to the pace of the game until suddenly he did.
Yeah.
And then it all...
And I know
all,
that sounds well, stupid, but...
No, but...
But it's true. He was out of it, and then we score the goal, and he's in it.
But yeah, you know yourself, well, you know, if you come on as a substitute, the guys that are in the game are in the rhythm of the game and in the pace of the game, and you're coming in here first down the start. Sure, you've been watching it, but there's very few players that can just really hit the ground running as a substitute for the minute they come onto the pitch. They need to get a tempo of the game, and they need to get the vibe or the way things are going. And I think that he took a wee bit of time to get that. But once he got it, then he started to look particularly good in terms of attacking play, and he offered good support up front. Yang didn't have the game he had against Simon. But again, I think Yang's getting broader, stronger, and he's better understanding the nature of Scottish football and the fact that guys are going to kick you, son, and you're going to need to learn to live with that, you know, and you're going to need to be strong enough to deal with it. I think that for the first 12 months of his time in the club, he's been like, well, I get a ball, and the rules are you're not allowed to kick me. You need to try and tackle me. I said, doesn't it work like that here? You know, and so there was an inexperience there, and maybe he realises I need to physically dominate this game if I want to be a strong, you know, it's not enough just to be a tricky winger. I need to be able to push this fullback away, or I need to get in front of it and give the centre-half a bit with a shoulder. Whatever it takes, he has to be cuter. Maybe that's coming on. I think his best game before the Simon game was against Aberdeen early on in the season when he came on, he played in the right, and he looked particularly good for a fair bit of it. When he came off the bench on Sunday, I didn't think he had the game that he had against Simon, but he certainly looked a better fit in the team than he has done in the past 3-4 months. You know, it's as if the turn of the calendar year has worked for him, and he's suddenly starting to look like a player that maybe, you know, we've all said there's a player in there. Maybe there is a player in there now, you know, maybe we might start to see it. I don't think he's a starter. I don't think he's a starter on Sunday. But I'm not as concerned about him coming off the bench on Sunday as I would have been, say, 2 months ago.
Yeah. And not every player can be someone. We need a squad of players who are capable of playing first-team football, but patently there's going to be players who are better than other players. So there is an element of, certainly at the stage the squad's at, if you can get him to the point where it's not the end of the world when he comes on, which in periods in the past, you've gone, oh God, Yang's coming on. If you can get to a point where you can see value to him playing on the pitch, then his teammates will as well, which will all help him. Because instead of when they get the ball, they go, well, I can't pass it over there because there's Yang, and they turn back inside. It gives us the option. So, yeah, as you say, maybe his girlfriend came over and he was saying, You know, maybe she gave him a shake. And...
Maybe she's been working on one-twos with him. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's working. I think another aspect is the way the team celebrated with him against St Mirren, and the way the team celebrated with Maida yesterday afternoon, you know, when they were doing the walk round, it showed a good sense of togetherness. And you really see that, not to be. I mean, if anybody hasn't listened to it, the Andrew's interview with Simon Donnelly is really good and talks about his sense of togetherness with a number of his players. So it's not a new thing, you know, but it's well worth a listen in terms of the podcast. But there does seem to be an age cohesion amongst them. There seems to be a good sense of team for them all. And it was nice to see that, you know, that they were delighted for Yang, St Mirren, and they were clearly delighted for Maida, the way they were dancing along his song. Which, by the way, Tequila, great song, love it, but it's right, good, but it's too long. See that build up? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I think? No, I'm not going to go through, but the build up until you get to the river, you go, Maida, right? It goes on and on and on. Yeah. That's a big chunk of time before you get to the river, you go, Maida. And I don't know if I can be bothered with that. It's a bit like, I'm not turning in for a huddle anymore, and I'm not doing all the build up. I might do the last wee bit and shout Maida, but I'm not doing all the build up to it. I just can't be bothered. Life's too short. I'm from Glasgow, right? My life expectancy is 4 years from the age I'm at right now. I don't have time to be singing all that bit.
Do you know, the other thing, and again, maybe this is me being a Bordeaux fat, I'm listening thinking, can we not have found a Japanese-based song?
Oh, all right, because we're all Japanese-based song experts, aren't we?
No, but you know.
Oh, do you mean like one of the racist ones about the Japanese that are from this country?
No.
All singing Japanese boy again and all that sort of stuff.
Get St. Anthony on and he'll tell us some 1940s songs about the Japanese, no doubt.
No.
No, I was just meaning, I'm listening to a song which, the basis of which relates to a Mexican drink. That's what I'm thinking. But if you're going to do something like that, would it not be better to at least have it relating to something Japanese? That was all.
Well, I've just a moment of clarity where Tees for Tims or something like that on, I can't remember what it was, somebody went and put a picture of it up and they're working with a new image, and it was like a wee sort of yellow label with a picture of Maida with a sombrero. And could I get what that was all about at all today? I mean, I was busy today and there was things going on, and somebody sent it to me and went, this is really funny, isn't it? You know how you look at it and go, I don't get it, but I'm not sending it back to you. I don't know what you're talking about. I just thought, I'm sitting up trying to figure it out later, and I've just had a blinding moment of clarity. It's the tequila ball. That's what it is.
Yes.
Oh, of course. Aye, I'm getting old. I really am. But
anyway, you'll need to go in a moment. So before I do,
I'll give 6 minutes.
In 6 minutes, I'm actually planning to do another podcast before Sunday. So in 6 minutes, though, in case I don't get it done, I thought Brendan was very brave in the post-match press conference yesterday, when he's then asked about getting ready for Rangers, and he says, they stole our system for the last game, but don't worry, more or less, he says, but don't worry, we know they did it, and so we know what we're going to do next time, and fuck you. Was summary, I'm sort of paraphrasing there, I don't know if he necessarily used those words.
There is me worrying about my use of paper ticket wankers, right, and you're just using language like that?
Pretty much, that's what Brendan said. You know, we know what they did. They'll not do it again, and we'll screw them over. I thought that was quite brave from Brendan. Obviously, exceptionally self-confident. So what are your thoughts on that?
So, see, on Wednesday night, I normally do stuff that weekly about Wednesday, and then tidy it up on the Thursday, and then put it up. On Wednesday night, I wrote about 1,000 words on how awful an appointment Barry Ferguson was, right? And then on Thursday, I sat down and watched the telly. I really enjoyed myself. And Mourinho totally ruined everything that I was going to write. And that's why there wasn't a Celtic Derby later this week, right? Because somehow, Barry Ferguson-led Rangers team got that result. Now, they probably
got
it.
Not only did they win 3-1, they had two goals chopped off that literally were a toenail offside.
Aye. And, I mean, Mourinho played without a midfield at all, right? I mean, it's the second most disappointed I've been in Mourinho in Europe in the last 21 years. Okay?
So, you and I know someone who's a big fan of Mourinho's in transition chat.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, that transition, That wasn't working. There's an issue there that I think maybe his moment has passed. If that's the way you think,
I was, I did message him and said, "What about this transition shit? Because they're running straight through the middle." Fenerbahce,
your agenda's fairly transparent in the way you toned the question. To be fair, but having said that, right, our manager is better than any other manager in the country. But he's certainly better than that manager. Now, if they play three five two, then it'll be interesting to see how high up our front three play and whether they play on their back three. I do feel sorry for Tavernier, though, right? Tavernier has played a right back up against Maeda at left wing for the last 5 years. And they basically go, "Listen, Tav, we're going to give you a break. We're going to move you in one." And then he looks up and Maeda's been moved in one. And he's like, "I can't get away from this guy. I'm going to play centre forward just to get him to play my centre half." You know? It's so...
Do you know, maybe, and I mentioned this to you just as you're speaking there about Tavernier being up against him, the Kasper Schmeichel podcast this week on the thing
with Roy Keane. Ian Wright, yeah.
Where Schmeichel talks about, because Brendan says, we know what we're going to do. Maybe they're going to do this. So Kasper Schmeichel talks about last season playing for Anderlecht. And it's on the point back of Jamie Carragher saying, modern football, everybody's man-marking about the park. And he can see a situation where the spare man becomes the goalkeeper. And Kasper Schmeichel says, game last season for Anderlecht, just before we go out to play, the manager says, "See, when we're in possession of the ball, you're going to the right side of a back three." And so Schmeichel played like a backy and he went to the right side of a back three. And Anderlecht were 3-0 up at half-time. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe we're going to play Schmeichel as a backy in against Rangers. What do you think?
Let's not go mental, right? I mean, I'm seeing people doing things like, you know, we could beat 7-1. We could, let's just win 3 points. That's it. 3 points is good enough. See if we put a show on and we score a couple of goals, great. Just win the game. See that New Year's Day? We should never have been in that situation. We should never allow them to treat us that way. Win the game. I think the way to win the game is to allow Engels to sit just a wee bit deeper, either alongside McGregor or swap on McGregor. And if they go with McGregor, then Engels can do that stuff he's been doing the last two games after they take McGregor off. I think that's the solution to it, because I think they managed to block McGregor out of the game, and our centre-halves, can he find somebody to pass to? But if we bring another option back, then I don't think they'll be able to cope with that.
Yeah,
he says as if he knows what he's talking about. Do you know what I mean? I just think that'll make a difference. I think Sloop is strong enough to get up and down that wing. I think the trick is you show Czerny out all the time, out on his weaker foot. You don't allow him to cut in. I think Trusty needs to be quite strong. A wee bit worried about Trusty turning into Christopher Julian, but he needs to be quite strong and dominant. Carter Vickers just plays his own game. Johnson plays his own game. Schmeichel plays his own game. None of those have any concern about. Hatate needs to show. If Hatate shows, then we'll run riot. I think we play exactly the same team we played yesterday. We bring Ida on later on in the game, who I feel a bit sorry for Ida that, you know, he's second choice. The main striker goes away, he's still second choice. You know, it says something about where we see him and we're set up. But we bring him on for the last 20 minutes or so. He puts himself about a bit. He gets himself in good positions. I could see us winning. I'll take a 1-0, but I'll take 2-0. I'm not be greedy. You know, just get the points, beat them, let them know that they're not good enough. Don't give them any hope. Don't give them any hope, because they want to cling on to something, and we gave them hope at New Year. It was false hope, and it was good fun the way it's all turned out, but we don't want to give them any hope.
Maybe a bit like New Year, us losing to them kept Clement in a job for now a couple of months. Maybe the key to it is if we were to lose, then they'll be in a dilemma about whether to keep Barry Ferguson. That would be the only solace you could take out of it.
What I'm loving is that people are actually talking about, if Barry gets them to the final of the Europa League, can they really afford to sack him? Could they? And you're like, have you looked at his record at Alloa? He never managed to get Alloa in the Europa League, great. Never managed to get them in it. What was that called? The Petrified Cup final. Great, let's just take this one game at a time. I'd love them to keep him because he's staunch as anything. You know, and that's what they need. They don't need a tactical, cerebral thinker of a manager. They don't need somebody that's good for European football. They need a staunch manager. They need somebody in Brogues, Brown Brogues.
Brogues,
they need.
Yeah, and a cardigan underneath the suit.
Yeah, I think that in Barry, they've got the ideal man for the job. I certainly would appoint him on a permanent basis if it was up to me.
So would I. Well, with that, it is just gone 16 minutes past. You're right now running late, so I better go and say, Eddie Pearson, thanks very much.
Good speaking to you. Catch up with you soon.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.